Hey, Kevin, how are you?
Hi, Michael, doing well.
Awesome. Let me see if I can turn this camera around here. Oop, turned off. Okay, oh, never mind.
Nah, no sweat. Audio only is good just in case we hit bandwidth issues.
No worries. Appreciate you reaching out. It's good to talk with you.
Oh, likewise. Looking forward to this. Any questions? Are you ready to get right down into it?
Yeah, well, I haven't seen the questions beforehand, or at least I don't think I have, but I'll do the best I can. I hope this is helpful.
Perfect. All right, let's get right started. We'll start with your year of graduation and your major.
Sure. So graduated spring of 2010, and I was a music business management major as a guitar principal.
Guitar principal. And was that the management track?
It was. Yep.
Perfect. And we'll get to your whole path later. But for now, tell us about your current job. What do you do?
Right. So currently I'm a senior account manager at a company called Pixability. And we're a startup in the ad tech space, and we specialize in social video campaigns. So a lot of people out there slinging media today, buying advertising across platforms like YouTube and Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and so on that have a video product today. And we specialize on delivering insights for those platforms, helping our clients understand their audiences better as a part of the campaigns they buy.
Oh, so like market research, sort of.
Yeah, essentially. So, for instance, as part of any Facebook campaign, after a campaign is done, and I should say, you know, as part of the setup process, we segment out different audiences that are part of the target demographic, whether that's the interest people have or, you know, age and gender segments and behaviors online. And then we test essentially against whatever seems to resonate best with that audience, whether that would be different videos or, you know, different types of products that clients have. So we really specialize in helping them test and segment and ultimately optimize those campaigns for their best performance.
Now, I'm a little bit curious when you say optimizing campaigns. So You're not the ones who create the videos then?
That's right. You know, in some cases on the front end, we will have suggestions and feedback. Certainly video lengths and styles and pacing and things like that, depending on the format. We have some insight experientially to say, hey, we suggest using the 15-second spot on Facebook and maybe something a little bit longer on YouTube, for instance. But we don't, as you sort of insinuated, have a lot of control on the creative side. That, I think, is a gap within our industry. So one of the things that we ultimately try to do is help the teams buying media, certainly the media teams that we work with at brands and agencies, to get feedback on the creative and how they can improve for future campaigns.
Well, I'm a little bit curious because once a video is made, what's left for you all to do?
Yeah. So once the video is made, they actually need to, in most cases, you have, say, a creative agency or a creative team working on that the actual production of the asset. And then at that point, in many cases within the industry, it gets passed on to, say, a media agency or, say, an in-house buying team for a brand directly. And they either will engage us for some insights. We have some software products that we offer specific to that for them to help with pre-campaign research. Or in most cases, we will actually engage with them to, say, build the ads directly for YouTube, for Facebook, and manage them essentially throughout the flight.
Okay, cool. And you said you're an account manager.
Yeah, so my job is to work directly with our clients, make sure we have all of the assets that we need, whether that would be companion banners and imagery, or, of course, the videos themselves. We also provide recommendations on copy to go along with those assets. In addition to that, just helping with general strategic guidance in terms of what are the specifications, what are the client's goals, what are they ultimately trying to achieve, so what are the metrics involved, and how do we need to best report and frankly set up the campaigns to help those clients reach those goals. And then I work with a campaign management team to actually build those ads and execute them. And, of course, there's a lot of operational elements involved in terms of hitting budgets and launching on a certain timeline, and then all the reporting involved, and so it's managing that whole process.
So I'm getting the impression that you're not really selling the product. It's sort of after a deal has been signed, they come to you. Is that correct, or do you, in fact, get involved in selling products?
Yeah, so in a small company like Pixability, and this is pretty common for, you know, teams between 20 and 100 people in the ad tech space, where someone like myself, in many cases, will be involved somewhat on the front end in terms of are we pricing a deal correctly? You know, for certain engagements, it may make sense for me to go in as a sales engineer and help provide insight as part of the sales process. But that really just depends. And in most cases, deals are far along enough in the pipeline that they're, you know, there are a certain likelihood to close where it makes sense to devote, you know, our resources in that capacity.
Sure. And you said so the size of your company, you gave it the 20 to 100 range?
Sure. Yeah.
And about how big?
Yeah. So we are at Pixability, we are pushing 70 people. And I think that's it's fairly common within the kind of ad tech startup sector where you have, you know, at least two rounds of funding. We actually went through a Series C round here last year, and we'll likely scale to about 100 people in about a year's time.
Gotcha. So you're still in the startup getting funding stages.
Yeah, absolutely. I think. The startup space, especially in Boston, you know, I happen to have since transplanted out to the West Coast here in the Bay Area. Between those two, you know, sections, there's definitely a lot of good jobs in marketing. There's a lot of startup money, and I think definitely one of the things that was helpful to me coming out of Berkeley was the differentiating factor of having a Bachelor of Arts degree, having a music focus. I think there's something to people who are really good listeners that's a really important trait in dealing directly with clients. Being able to listen to someone in a phone call, for instance, and hear subtleties in their voice, and you know they may have answered your question, but did they, you know, are they holding something back? Is there more to give? The interpersonal dynamic of having, say, 15 people on a phone call. Undue silence, things like that, where negative space can play a role in the dynamic of a conversation. And I think people who have a music background and are good listeners are really astute at teasing out subtleties in that kind of environment.
Oh, very nice. You answered one of my later questions.
Sorry about that.
It's all good. And how long has Pixability been around?
So Pixability has been around for 8 years, has gone through a number of different iterations. I started it again a little over 3.5 years ago. And by then, we were focused purely on YouTube and helping almost exclusively at that time brands with their YouTube strategy. Since then, we have taken a turn much more media-focused, buying media and executing paid campaigns, that is, for social video platforms beyond just YouTube.
Gotcha. Okay. Oh, another question is, you said out of 70 people, so you as a senior account manager, how many other people do what you do at your company?
Yeah, so our customer success team, which is the team that I'm on, mm-hmm. we are, roughly 12 people, and that's between, say, my vice president, who's my boss of customer success, to we have a data science portion of our team, slash insights, and they help with more sales engineering work. They help with insights specific to campaigns, helping sort of automate our whole process from an ad operations workflow and maximize results essentially at the end of the day for our clients. I would say the vast majority of the company today are actually developers. We have a whole product suite that allows us to drive those insights, and we're developing a series of tools, which is pretty typical within our space to do so. And so that means a significant portion of our team and resources as a company go to development work.
Understood. All right. By the way, how many hours a week do you typically work out? I'm sure it varies a little bit.
Yeah. You know, being on the West Coast and still probably 45% of my clients or so, 40% are, you know, work on East Coast time. My day usually starts a little before 8 o'clock in the office, and I'm usually on a 4 o'clock ferry home, and I'll answer some emails and do work at home sort of as needed. So anywhere between 35 and 50 hours a week, just depending on the week, honestly.
Gotcha. Now, can you describe maybe a little more detail your typical day, or if you prefer, your typical week at work?
Yeah, absolutely. So the balance of my day is really split between, and as I would say, any given week is driven by when we have campaigns launching. I'd say that's a major driver of what's going on. And so that might mean a kickoff call one day to get acquainted with a client and establish parameters of a campaign and deadlines and deliverables for a campaign, to building and delivering weekly reports with a nice beautified Excel sheet with the requisite numbers that are involved, as well as some editorial in terms of optimizations that we've made and recommendations that we would make, or, you know, with approval, that is. To sales engineering meetings throughout, you know, in the city, meeting with folks in person on the, you know, to help with sales engineering, to certainly perhaps too many internal meetings. I think every company struggles with optimizing internal meetings in general. So we have team meetings and we have product meetings. I have a subcomponent of what I do is specific to helping us optimize our product. So I basically lead a group of account managers, and we just essentially talk about issues that we were experiencing with the product, best practices, how we can better optimize. And so that also is probably 10% of my time devoted to giving product feedback as well. So, and I also, again, I have three campaign managers. I'm always going to have invoicing duties at the start of every month as well. So
you said you have three campaign managers, so like you supervise three people?
Exactly. Actually, the ones sitting in AdWords and Facebook. And I mean, I do some of that too as needed, but for the most part now I'm focused on making sure they're on task, that I have the reports that I need. And instead of basically buying the media today, which I was doing more of a couple of years ago, today I'm at a point where focusing on, you know, the team's effectiveness, that we're hitting client goals, that we're on reporting timelines, frankly, also on budget, right, for the margins that we're trying to hit. So.
Of course. Gotcha. Great. Next question I have for you is, of course, one thing you had to, criteria you had to meet in order to do these interviews was you have to enjoy your job. And the way you talk about it, you hear the charge in your voice, but I'd like you to kind of articulate for us, what is it that you enjoy about your job or your career, if you prefer? Like your field.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think if you would have told me when I was in school that I'd be, executing these media buys and would be pretty knee deep in marketing and advertising at this stage of my career, I probably would have laughed at you. Don't think that it would have been in my plans at the time, which I would imagine maybe a lot of your students may feel the same way. It's hard to get a sense of, you know, the directions life sends you on sometimes. But in anything that you're doing, and I think any good business setting, the things that make it worthwhile are, frankly, the people that you work with. Do you have a chance to learn new things all the time and stretch your wings and frankly, grow for those areas that are of interest to you? I, in particular, really enjoy the process of sitting down with a group of people and getting ideas out and brainstorming. I really enjoy the process, and I think a lot of musicians, performers share this as well, of getting in front of a group and, say, telling a story or commanding a room in some way, shape, or form and feeling confident about whatever it is that you're doing, whether that's playing a solo piece or talking about the results of a campaign, right? In some ways, there's a lot of overlap there in terms of, you know, you need to be able to listen while you're speaking, right? You need to be able to kind of improvise on the fly if a client, you know, sort of throws you a curveball question in the middle of things. So I think that's what I really enjoy the most is frankly working with people, getting ideas across, moving ideas forward, and ultimately working with technology as well that I think improves experience for all involved. I can't say for sure that I'll always be in media. I think a lot of that has been sort of the natural progression of my own personal career at this point. And I'm sure as my kids get a little bit older, I'll have more time to reflect on such things and maybe make other changes that we all go throughout life. But I think that, again, the most important part to me, I think being happy in a job is at a baseline, enjoying what you're doing every single day. And a lot of that has to do, I think, with the people that you work with and the substance of what you're dealing with.
Very nice. All right. So let's take it back now to 2010, or if you prefer sooner.
Sure.
And maybe earlier. And again, as you say, you probably weren't thinking you were going to be, you know, deep into marketing 6 years later. Mm-hmm. But I'd like to hear sort of where was your headspace then, and then let's go step by step in the path that took you from there to here.
Yeah, so I think in my time at Berkeley, I really enjoyed some of the more, I think, the macro level classes that were all about thinking about our industry and thinking about the issues of the time. One of my favorite classes was with Don Gorder, who I don't know if he's still the chair.
He is.
There? He is. Okay. So he had a class, it was senior year, that was all about just kind of discussing issues within the industry and technology and how things are moving forward. And of course, at that time, Spotify was in Europe and they were really starting to show that they may have a provable model for streaming music and all the upheaval around licensing and revenue from physical sales was very much a hot issue at the time. And so I think at that stage, I knew that I was interested in technology. I was really excited about all the change that was happening in the industry. I actually wrote for the Music Business Journal and was editor there for some time. And working with Peter Alhadeff in that capacity, I think really also got me hungry and thinking, a bit more business minded and looking for those opportunities. And I think that's at that point when I I think someone had reached out to Don for recommendation as an intern, and I happened to be recommended for an internship at SonicBids. So do you remember? Have you heard of SonicBids?
I've heard of them, although if you asked me exactly what they do, I'd be kind of stuck.
Sure. So they're now mostly defunct, but SonicBids for a long time was sort of the go-to digital submission platform, say for booking bands online, say for South by Southwest and other big music festivals. Okay. And Panos Panay, who I think is still involved in the Berkeley community. Yeah,
Panos is company. I knew that was familiar. You know, he's at Berkeley now.
Yeah, he's at Berkeley now. That's right. I know he's really engaged with the community, which I love to see. And so I had an opportunity to join that team and was working directly with promoters in an account management kind of role.
Be clear, when you say internship, is this that internship that music business folks all do like in their last semester? Are we talking that internship or are we talking post-graduation?
It was essentially a part of that. I think I started a little bit sooner than that sort of requirement that was involved, but certainly that, yeah, it helped me meet that requirement because I had a small gig and they actually ended up retaining me for a separate different internship type roles at SonicBids. I bounced around between the account management team and doing sales lead generation and a couple of different things. So definitely got a taste of different sides of that business. And was able to actually turn that into my first job coming out of college. They were nice enough to hire me. I think I kind of got lucky with one guy leaving and then really needing the head at the time.
SonicBids hired you.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. So I was there for 2 years, I think, and ended up.
What was your title then?
So I was actually an account manager at SonicBids in a sort of junior role working directly with the promoter team. helping basically, you know, again, that was very much a SaaS sort of product for that industry at the time.
Sorry,
and
SaaS?
Yeah, software as a service. Okay. So, you know, so promoters would essentially have an entry fee and they would take a share, and only through using the software to a certain level were they able to get their fees, essentially, which is a nice sort of side profit for them as part of the, you know, the festival business model at the time. I'm not terribly sure how much that is still today, to be honest with you. But anyway, so I you know, that internship, I think, was really great. And honestly, I think any internship, any good internship, should allow you to explore a side of a business that you happen to be interested in. You know, just going to get coffee or food or something is not really beneficial. I think that was really great. You know, in my time at Sonic, it gave me a lot of flexibility to work on things that I was interested in and to kind of bounce around a little bit, and find ultimately what I really enjoyed doing, which was talking with people and getting on the phone a lot and just getting some good early experience as an account manager at that stage.
Hey, if you don't mind sharing, do you mind to give us a general idea of what they were paying you as a, you know, sort of at the beginning and at the end of your 2 years?
Oh yeah. Well, to be fair, at SonicBids at that time, as a really junior person, I was not being paid that well. I think at first, of course, I was that was all of, you know, at the tail end of what was a very difficult market for any person coming out of school at the time.
Oh yeah, the job market was terrible. 2009 through 2011 was all awful.
It was really bad. And so, of course, I was happy to have anything at that point. And I think they were paying me in and around about $35,000 a year, which wasn't a whole hell of a lot more than about minimum wage at the time.
Well, wait, $35,000 a year is like 17 or 18 an hour.
Is 17 in an hour? Okay, all right. Well, I remember it at the time, it didn't feel like a lot of money. And there were long days. I was also in the process of planning a wedding and all that fun stuff. So I think there were other pressures involved. But they, you know, the first job out of school, you know, again, I think the biggest part about it was you're not going to make a lot of money. You're going to get great experience. And more than anything, you know, building those bridges with people who can be a great reference for you for your next step, or if it's a place where you can grow, I think that's also really great. But I will say, for the, you know, friends that I've made in the industry and certainly from my own personal experience and for what I'm seeing today, I think very few young people at about our age, certainly millennials, don't typically stay at a job more than about 3 or 4 years. I think for the most part, people are really bouncing around a whole lot. And that, I think, can actually be a really good thing, not only from an economic standpoint on the macro level, where you have people, you know, if you have a more liquid workforce, I think you're more likely to have people who are going to be happier long term in what they're doing, because they're able to be more selective, and they're able to specialize over time. And certainly from my perspective, that really played out, where I felt that I wasn't really excited about being on the sales side, really liked working directly with customers, and executing and sort of being the trusted advisor kind of role. And I was able to cut my teeth in that capacity at SonicBids and turn that into, you know, a few similar type jobs on my way to where I am today.
Gotcha. So, all right, let's keep going. So it's 2 years later, you're at SonicBids. What's your next step and what prompts you to take it?
So at that time, I had been recruited to kind of be a part of basically a startup within SonicBids, which was a really cool idea. And I have to credit that whole team for the out of the box thinking. They essentially created a branded marketing agency, if you will, within that company.
So it was all SonicBids employees. And at one point they're like, hey, Michael, you want to be part of this?
Yeah, that's exactly right. They were in the process of building it, and they happened to, yeah, for whatever reason, they thought I would be a good fit for being a part of it. What essentially they were doing is they were leveraging that network of bands to put together sort of cool experiential marketing campaigns. So, you know, think like Battle of the Bands, where a brand will come in and sponsor it, and they'll have online submissions, and there'll be a whole review process that there's an accompanying website around, and they'll put some marketing dollars behind it, and it'll lead up to a cool event and some additional maybe some additional follow-up events, and we're able to quantify the reach behind it in that capacity. So lots of cool ideas. It was really fun working on it was very creative in nature, in terms of there were no defined sort of campaigns necessarily that we were doing, and we were just constantly trying to figure out how we could innovate on top of this network of bands that we had and give them cool opportunities and bring brands in the fold and generate some revenue that way. So that was my first foray, I'd say formal foray, into any sort of marketing mindset. Mm-hmm. And from there, I was there for about a year, and then had an opportunity for something totally different. And I think honestly at that time the pressure was I had a quota, and I really wasn't hitting my number. And it was great that we were so flexible in terms of being able to come up with these campaigns, but it was also a little bit difficult because it wasn't quite as structured really as I felt like I may have needed at that point in my career. And I was having, and I wasn't making as much money as I really felt like I needed to, given the pressures overall. And so I started looking for other jobs, and I found something really different. It was more of a search engine optimization focus at a company called Content Lead.
So hold on.
Mm-hmm.
Stop there for just a moment.
Mm-hmm.
So two questions. First of all, how did you do this next job search? Was it Craigslist, websites, word of mouth? How did you do search in general? And then how exactly did you get this next job?
Yeah, man. I mean, it was pretty high volume. I had the benefit of my fiance at the time, who is a tremendous kind of communications person, and so she gave my resume a really good look. And that's something I would always recommend: is don't do your resume by yourself. Like, always have a peer or a friend or a colleague or someone that you don't know even review your resume and go through it and give you feedback. And I think it's important. And also go out there and look at examples of ones you really love. I think that's really key. Honestly, I read a lot of resumes, and I can tell you that for the most part, I read them in about 30 seconds, given the volume that's coming in. And so you have to, if you don't have the relevant experience that I'm looking for, then you need to catch my attention some other way. Especially in our 5-second attention span culture today, you got to have a hook. I think that's important. Separate discussion, I suppose. I think getting out there aggressive, it was all the above. It was Craigslist. It was Indeed. It was Glassdoor, or certainly, I don't know if Glassdoor was around then, but certainly that's a part of the game today. LinkedIn today, especially, I think is really powerful. You need, if you don't have one already going into your senior year, you definitely should have a really solid rounded out LinkedIn page. Great headshot. I think all those things today, and the way you present yourself across those type of professional social platforms is really key.
And by the way, were you mm-hmm. still at this Sonic Bits company while you were job searching?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I was there. I was doing the best I could every single day, but knew I wanted to change, and started searching pretty in earnest there for months.
Two more questions. What is? Do you recall which was the platform that got you the next job?
Honestly, I don't remember.
It was one of the many resumes you sent out, and they brought you in for an interview, and things worked out.
Yeah, and it was through there. I discovered the job, and then I ended up applying directly on the website. I was not for that particular gig. I was not recruited or anything like that. It was just a direct application, cover letter, resume.
Gotcha. Next question is, because Sonic Bids obviously is, very music business.
Yeah.
You're a music business major. Mm-hmm. It sounds like you were not limiting your job search to the music industry at this point.
No, I at that point, again, the music industry, especially, jobs were really hard to come by. I had looked at some music tech startups like Echonest at the time, but just didn't really have the skill set that they were looking for. They didn't have the need for someone like me. They needed a lot more developer help than was well beyond my expertise. So Yeah, I mean, I think in looking at the market and looking at my options, I decided to really just kind of open it up and just see what's out there, right? And just get a sense of, well, is this would I actually want to do that? And for me, the answer was, well, sure. I'd always been surrounded by small, you know, my parents had a small business running out of our basement for 10 years when I was a kid, and I'd always been around the business environment and was comfortable in that environment. And I thought it was a good opportunity for me to stretch my wings beyond the music industry and just see if it's something that I would be interested in doing, especially because I wasn't sure what I wanted to do long term. I'm not sure I'm still sure what I want to do long term. I think that's a process that we all go through in life. And frankly, that changes as we grow and change too. So, I think, it's tough to know sometimes what the right thing to do is, but I think the mindset that I was encouraged to take on, and again, I credit my now wife with this, is she said, look, you don't have to, even if you get an offer letter from this company, you don't have to take that job, you know, but there's no harm in exploring it.
Very nice. Okay. So you said the next place was like a search engine optimization.
Yep. We focused on both technical and editorial applications of SEO, as it's called at the time. So fixing client websites that may have had technical issues in regard to their search engine visibility, say duplicate pages, or, you know, there are a lot of different things that can cause issues there. And then also I think this is what interested me about this job, is that we had an in-house content team. And my job was to understand the client's business and then develop a whole content strategy for their blogs, so that ultimately their website would grow in real estate and they would be able to generate more search traffic that way.
Interesting. Man, what was your title? Do you recall?
Content marketing specialist, okay. Which is just a fancy word for also basically an account manager at that time. I had a portfolio of anywhere between 50 and 100 accounts, mostly small and medium-sized businesses. That was a great experience, just getting a sense of what these business owners really cared about, you know, what really affected their bottom line. Got exposure to a lot of different industries, and that was really helpful also in terms of just getting a firm foundation from a digital marketing perspective, you know, getting acclimated with things like Google Analytics and AdWords, and just in general search marketing, email marketing. We started to do some social stuff as well, so it was just a really great learning experience.
Gotcha. And how long were you there for?
I was there for I think 2 years.
Okay, so now we're up to like 2014.
Let's see. 2010, I was at SonicBids for, I think I actually, my time at SonicBids started technically before 2010 because of my time as an intern there.
Gotcha.
So I don't remember how long technically I was full time. Maybe it would have been only about a year and a half or so. But I moved to I was at Constantly between, I think, the early part of 2011 and the tail end of 2012. So, okay. Almost 2 years.
Okay. And then you said then your next job is Pixability.
Yeah, exactly. And so
how that happened, and what, again, sort of what prompted you to make the change, and how did you do
it? Yeah, that one I was starting to feel like I was ready for a change. And then that one I happened to actually be recommended for. There was a salesperson at Contently that moved on actually to Pixability, and they were hiring account managers. They had a referral program, and this guy put my name in. You know, we had a good experience working together. He had a lot of faith in me as an account manager, and I started going through the interview process. And of course, being recommended for a job is always ideal, right? Because you walk in.
That's been a very common pattern that I've heard from a lot of people.
Yes.
The whole coworker moves to another company and then recommends you.
Oh, absolutely. That's very common in the space. And, you know, especially say, you know, I've had friends whose bosses will move to another company and then bring, you know, a portion of a team with them.
Right.
That seems to be very common. I think it's probably common in any industry, but especially in the modern sense where you have, again, I think you have a lot more liquidity in the work, in the workplace, where people are kind of, you know, bouncing around every couple of years. Whereas, of course, my parents and even their parents were, you know, my grandfather was at Kodak for 50 years or something. And you just don't really see that today anymore. So I think it's a natural fallout then that people will kind of follow other people that they really trust and know. And frankly, the way that companies recruit today, recruiting is really expensive. And many times companies will have hefty and attractive referral bonuses as yes. well to get people to make them. And that I think is also a driver there.
Mm-hmm. So, and you said it earlier, when you started at Pexability, you were, again, were you doing this kind of account support?
Yep. Same kind of deal, but with a different focus, right? So instead of SEO and website optimization, it was very video centric. There was some application of my SEO knowledge from a search perspective, because of course YouTube now is the world's second largest search engine, and you do have video metadata, titles and tags and descriptions, and that was helpful. But primarily the work that we were doing was very much more video strategy related. We're starting to do some paid media, so a lot of that was very new to me. But I, you know, again, having the core set of account management principles of, you know, being able to talk with clients, being able to do presentations, justify the investment that clients are making in our business. That's, you know, that was the foundation that I was able to build on.
And it sounds like at some point you were promoted from account manager to essentially the team leader.
Yeah. So, I mean, I still have a boss. You know, we do have a VP level person who mm-hmm. manages the team. But yeah, I'm the most tenured otherwise in that account manager that we have on the team. I've been pushing for a director level role now for the last 6 months, and I just don't think it's going to happen by virtue of the headcount that we have today. So right. So again, I think any company, you have to figure out, okay, do you have a clear growth path? What makes sense for your career? What are other people's titles within this industry? Honestly, I've seen situations where people will have the flexibility to designate their own title based upon the direction they're trying to go in the future. So that's very much a consideration for me. But yeah, you know, essentially, I was able to demonstrate the first couple of years there that was able to retain clients at a high rate. And upsell strategically and work with salespeople. And ultimately, companies want to retain people that they feel are effective. And so a promotion was in order about a year and a half ago. And we'll see. I mean, I'm actually honestly in the process of looking for something new now, just because it's been coming up on 4 years. And I feel like I'm, you know, I'm starting to butt up against the ceiling a little bit. It's time for me to manage a bigger team, and I need to keep growing.
Gotcha. And hey, if I could just ask, this goes back to earlier, you said Pixability is at about 70 people now. Do you recall how big it was when you started there?
I think we were 12 to 15 people when I started, and that was three and a half years ago.
Okay, so yeah, you really are like the most senior person then doing this, I imagine. I'm sure your department has grown a lot.
Yes. In fact, this is the part where I brag, or Pixability was apparently named Massachusetts' fastest growing private company in the between 2012 and the end of 2015. So we've grown very quickly. You know, video in general has grown very quickly. I think a lot of that has just been serendipitous for my time that I've been there. But yeah, seen a lot of growth. You know, again, a lot of that growth has been driven by investors. And I think that's definitely something to look out for is, hey, if you're looking at companies to work for, how are they funded? Are they profitable? Do they have cash? You don't want to go to work for someone who goes under 6 months later, you know?
Absolutely. Great. So let's move on to the third part of the interview.
Mm-hmm.
And my first question for you is, what, if any, is your current relationship with music?
Ah, that's a great question. So I have a couple of buddies of mine who we get together and play once in a while. Family gatherings are always a musical event in some way, shape, or form. I play every single day to my kids as well, sometimes around bedtime, sometimes just for fun. Oh,
nice.
You know,
how
I've done.
Your kids?
I have a 2-year-old and a 7-month-old.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, so we're all sorts of crazed around here. it's wonderful. I mean, I think, look, the way that I talk about it now is that music is something that you never lose, right? So my grandfather had Parkinson's disease for 40 years, and at the end of his life, he really couldn't do much, right? Couldn't feed himself. He couldn't, you know, he was fully dependent on my grandmother for everything. But you know what? He could sit down at the piano and still play his favorite songs. And that's something that always stuck with me, in that I think there's an emotional connection. There's the muscle memory that's involved. Unless you just have a catastrophic injury, God forbid, that's, the music's always going to stick with you. And you know what? Even if you did have something like that, it's still going to be with you upstairs, right? You're still going to hear it. And so I think even if you move away from performing full time, or if you move away from the idea of working within the music industry, that music still sticks with you. And there are still avenues out there, whether that would become, say, developing a library of your own music for license and TV or small budget production applications, whether that would be if you're a vocal major, exploring things like voiceover work is, I think, super cool. And I've done some of that on the side. Or playing open mics, or playing at events. I've played at a couple weddings for friends. There's just, no matter what, it's going to keep coming back and keep coming around in some way, shape, or form. And I don't think it ever really leaves you if you've devoted time, and if you have the passion for your instrument or for your craft. That never leaves you, no matter what you end up doing.
Gotcha. Great answer. Okay, next question for you. And you did mention some stuff earlier, but again, you went to Berklee College of Music. You got your Bachelor of Music degree.
Yeah.
And thinking about your current job,
mm-hmm.
is there anything that you feel, let's say, relative to liberal arts school or something, mm-hmm. that Berklee did really well to prepare you for your path? What you're doing now?
Yeah. Again, I think I mentioned the fact that being a good listener, I think, is really important for any line of business. Being able to read in between the lines of an email, or listen to subtleties on a phone call, and meetings, and in person, I think that's really important. I think that I happen to be blessed that the involvement that I had at the MBJ. The Music Business Journal, and a couple, key classes for me, frankly, just the opportunities that I was presented at my time at Berklee, given the internships that I had and how I was able to turn that into a career, was, I think, a very concrete and direct benefit for me personally that I wouldn't have had without my time there.
Sure.
And I would say also that a lot of the education that I apply today, some of the accounting I use, funny enough, I know a lot of people just hate that stuff, but it is really handy, both from a personal context and when I have to, do invoicing and understand how, margins work and cost of doing business and all those types of things. Having a good foundation there is helpful. Also, I would say, the macro level thinking about an industry that you get from your time at Berklee, and a lot of the writing that results from, say, an economics class or from a music business industry type of class, even some of the more philosophical classes that I took there, philosophy of music class, I think I just really loved, and I can't remember the name of the instructor, but he was just tremendous.
Was it a liberal arts class?
It was a liberal arts class, yeah.
Oh. It wasn't Tedros Kyros, I know he does philosophy. Ethiopian guy?
I don't think that was him.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I'm drawing a blank on the name now. Again, there. I really do believe that there are some tremendous liberal arts professors there, and that kind of thinking in college was really helpful to me in terms of just being able to zoom out from your day to day and think about what you're doing and think about the sociocultural implications of say the kind of work you're doing, and frankly the type of people and businesses that you're working with, I think it was also really helpful. I had one other point that I wanted to make. I think just really, I would say the last thing is that I was never a great writer necessarily in school, but I do think that the writing that I needed to do to get through the music business track on the liberal arts classes that I took really helped me later on in terms of being able to get my thoughts out and externalize that. I think especially a lot of musicians, some of them tend to be more naturally introverted, and I would say skew a little bit down the middle, maybe on the introverted side, but being able to externalize those ideas in a setting where you need to present them in front of others, which I think a lot of musicians that does resonate with, right? Like you get out of the woodshed and then, okay, you got to go and do it, is a really valuable experience. Certainly the performance experience, super helpful from that capacity.
Very nice. Okay, well, now let's turn that question around.
Mm.
And, okay, so you went to Berklee, you got a bachelor's of music degree. But given that, is there anything that you look back at your Berklee education and you say, you know, it would have been really useful to have learned this back in college, and Berklee could have taught it to me, and they didn't?
You know, from a course load perspective, I would say, you know, it's a music school, right? So I happen to not work in the music industry today. And an easy answer would be, well, you know, I wish I had more, I did have marketing classes, but I wish there was more of that. I wish there was more of that. But I think a lot of that was self-directed in that I had no idea what the hell I wanted to do. And I was going through making sure that I could graduate. And so looking back, of course, hindsight's 20/20, I may have taken a different course load than I ended up having at the end. I think this is me speaking personally, in my time at Berklee, that not knowing what I wanted to do was really scary at the time. And I went through a period just before I met my future wife when I was at school, where I kind of had dropped a couple classes. I think I had one semester where I actually finished just one class and my grades were sucking. And
she a Berklee person?
She was not. She was at Boston University.
Gotcha.
Yeah. separate story. Yep. We'll have that over beer one time. I did go through a downtime at Berklee where I hadn't made a lot of friends and wasn't super social by nature anyway. Was kind of homesick. Wasn't sure what I wanted to do. And I also, frankly, felt the pressure on the student loan side. Right. I really didn't qualify for financial aid. I wasn't super savvy in terms of the best way for me to pay for my school there. And so that also put a lot, you know, had a lot of pressure on me, and I wasn't sure that I even wanted to finish at one point. It was beneficial for me to meet my wife, and she definitely remotivated me. And then I was not doing it just for myself. I was doing it for my family and for her and all the things that I saw in my future. But I think in hindsight, I definitely wish I would have taken more control over how we were planning financially around paying for school. Right. I mean, Berklee's expensive. Any private school is expensive. College is ridiculously expensive today. And that's a big social issue that we have to figure out as a country, mm-hmm. and how to fix that system. Because I guarantee you that most people in your classes are going to, if not a majority of them, a good portion of them are going to struggle with paying for loans after school. I certainly do today.
The last person I spoke with graduated with $150,000 of debt.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not quite that much, but I'm definitely, you know, at the bottom end of six figures still to this day, right? And that's six years on now. So it's a tremendous burden, and I think it's so important that that you take it really seriously, and also make sure you look at all your options too. I just, you know, I ended up engaging with some private loan companies that I, in hindsight, maybe didn't need to at the time, and I just didn't give it enough thought, didn't care. It's a can that I kicked down the road that if I were to go back today, I would say, hey, let's, you know, really get more in depth with the financial aid department, consider maybe doing some work for the school on the side for some additional help, maybe get a job on the side to help with the off-campus, you know, housing costs, things like that can really add up quickly. And so that's less, you know, it's certainly not a critique of my education. Fantastic education. I wouldn't change anything about it. Would I change how I paid for it? Yeah, I would. If I could, if I had other options at the time, definitely.
Very fair answer. All right. Next question for you. Well, you know, you pretty quickly got on a very good career path, you know, making that transition from music to non-music, and yet really kind of finding that thing you like to do and just going more and more into it.
Sure.
I'm sure you can imagine there are a lot of people, you know, from your graduate class and more recently, who have not yet found that path.
Mm-hmm.
And probably other people in their final year staring out into the big scary world.
The open ocean.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And for either or both of those groups, do you have any advice?
Wow. Well, I think the first advice that I would give is, you know, and this sounds really corny, but you always have to listen to that little voice in your head telling you if something is right or not, right? I mean, just because you can go off and make $100,000 a year, maybe in a career path, doesn't mean that that's going to make you happy. You know, I mean, I can tell you for sure that I'm happier today because I work hard to maintain a life work balance than I was, you know, my second or third year out of school working 60 hours a week because I felt like I needed to do that to prove my worth. I think finding that balance in yourself between the time that you're spending doing whatever it is that you're doing, I think is really important, right? So I would rather, you know, and I can say this now after being out there and doing this for 6 years out of school, that I would rather make less money at a job that I really enjoy than making, you know, a tons of money but not being able to spend time with my kids, right? So it's those things that motivate you and those things that make you happy that I think should always come first, really, no matter what. That's not to say that you shouldn't work hard or make sacrifices. That's all part of it from time to time, but you got to always try to come back to that balance. So, you know, for folks who are, I think, struggling finding whatever it is that they want to do, I think it's just a matter of kind of stacking experiences that you really enjoy, right? And going back to those things that you liked or that you resonated with and trying to do more of those things. And ultimately, I really believe in that we live in a country where if you live in an area where there are sufficient opportunities, I think that's key too, right? Like going back to Detroit and the complete economic downturn, your options might be somewhat limited. But if you're in Boston or New York or Chicago or San Francisco or within an hour's drive or so of those cities, man, there really are a lot of opportunities. And that might mean, you know, flipping burgers for a year while you're, you know, doing an internship for 20 hours a week to build on that. Like that's sometimes just what it takes to get to where you want to be. But those opportunities are definitely out there. And I think too many of us find ourselves in a position where we've made progress, but are making sacrifices that maybe are unnecessary. And then we get away from that balance. I think that's the harder part, you know, is maintaining that life balance that we all, I think, so hope to have.
Gotcha. All right, and we're up to the last question, which is, you know, you have the mic, as they say, and you're being recorded for all time. So is there anything else you'd like to say, anything we missed?
Well, if I were to turn back the clock and talk to myself in that senior year before I, you know, knew that I had sort of locked down a job coming out of school, I would just go back and look at myself in the eye and say, you know, don't worry too much. It's funny how life has a way of working things out. And, you know, even if you happen upon a series of really difficult events coming out of school, and I've had friends who definitely have, and they've had obligations that they had needed to address family wise or elsewhere, that, you know, you always have to remember to look up and look around. And if I think if you're thankful and open and honest and appreciate every moment, that life, I think, is ultimately very generous. So don't fall prey to too much fear, because it really would just get in your way. And I think that really affected me too much, looking out at the open ocean, if you will, to continue that metaphor.
Well, things certainly did work out for you, and I'm happy to hear how what a great path your life's on.
So, well, it's super exciting. You know, I've gone to a couple of alumni events in San Francisco. It's really fun meeting past grads and hearing about what they're doing. And people, you know, Berkeley grads are doing all sorts of cool stuff in all types of industries. So, yeah, it's cool stuff. Thank you, Kevin, for reaching out. It's good to talk with you.
Right. Likewise. Look for a message in the near future on LinkedIn.
All right. That sounds good. Thanks so much.
Have a great evening.
You too. Bye-bye.